This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer, Australia's only LGBTIQ+ national news and current affairs show. Proudly sponsored by KHQ Lawyers. Passionate about being the best.
The head of the Hillsong Church, Brian Houston, has continued to make headlines in the past week. It was reported yesterday that Mr. Houston failed to report allegations of child abuse against his father to New South Wales police. Houston's father, Frank, admitted in 1999 that he had committed sexual abuse in the 60s and 70s. The controversial pastor has been in the headlines after suggestions Prime Minister Scott Morrison asked the White House to invite Houston to a state dinner when he was in the United States earlier this month. The Prime Minister has refused to answer questions regarding the alleged invitation. David Macca McCarthy is not just the new president of the Joy Board, he's spoken courageously about his own experiences of sexual abuse. Toby Halligan sat down with Macca to discuss moral leadership and the Prime Minister's refusal to answer questions about Houston.
It's a pretty simple question. Did you invite him or didn't you? Number one. Pretty simple. You know, he can make comments about the Canberra bubble and I'm not going to engage in hypotheticals and, you know, a simple yes or no and it's done, right? The other question is, you know, what survivors want is they want to be heard, they want to be acknowledged, and they want people to be held to account. Mm-hmm. Now, Brian Houston has not been a fulsome cooperator with the New South Wales Police. Mm-hmm. That's on the record. They've said so. Mm-hmm. You know, he is in a leadership position in his church. He needs to live up to that leadership, mm-hmm. right? I don't care whether it was his father, his son, his uncle, or a member of his church. He has an obligation to protect children, not to protect the perpetrators, not to refuse to comment. It's simply not good enough. Now, you know, the National Redress Scheme resides in the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet. We've seen over 6,000 claims lodged and just over 10% have been finalised. Right? This is a long time. It's not good enough. The National Redress Scheme is pathetic. It's piss weak. I call it Kmart for kiddie fiddlers. It is not good enough, right? Both Labor and the Liberal Party and the National Party, I don't know why, agreed to 150,000 rather than the original recommendation of 200 or 250. I don't know why. They don't really want to engage on this. They think they've done their job. They've apologised. Oh, we've set up a system. But the very fact that people like Brian Houston, as the leader of his church, just as the leader of other churches, you know, they're not serious about this. Yeah. If they were serious about this, they'd actually be doing something about it. Not a day goes by where we see cases of child sexual abuse coming up in institutions. It hasn't stopped. It won't stop until, as a community, we actually, prepare to call it out, and the leaders of the communities call it out. Yeah, so I say to Brian Houston, you say you're a leader. Well, mate, you're not.
Yeah.
Right? You're gutless. You know, of course you're ashamed of what your father did. Why wouldn't you be? But, you know, how about a bit of penance?
Yeah.
How about a bit of honesty? And how about a bit of concern for the survivors? That's all that we ask.
Yeah.
And actually, it's a bit of a Christian idea, Brian. You should consider it.
Well, I was going to make the observation that it is, I know, a source of frustration to a lot of my friends who are Christian and who still attend church, that it sometimes seems like a number of the leaders of Australia's various Christian denominations, while they are happy to provide hot takes, if you like,
on
contentious issues or supposedly contentious issues when it comes to providing moral leadership and actually making difficult decisions that might lead to, you know, internal pressure or might lead to facing ugly truths, that actually very few of Australia's churches have, you know, conducted themselves with much moral leadership.
Look, they haven't stepped up. They won't step up because it is so rife. And that's not to say, you know, not every priest, not every minister.
Of course.
Yeah. It's a small proportion, but they're busy. And they've been busy. And the church and the churches and the institutions know. Right? I know this from the school that I went to. The teachers knew, the headmaster knew. Right? They did nothing. That is not unusual. And what Brian Houston is doing is exactly the same thing. Nothing to see here, right? Oh, I was named in the Royal Commission. Yeah, well, you know, I'm not cooperating with the police. My father was a pedophile. That's the truth. Own up to it, face up to it, right? It's not his place to apologise for it, but he should. But as the leader of his church, he needs to clean the slate here. And, you know, whether the Prime Minister invited him or not, to go to the White House. You know yourself, Toby, in politics, when politicians refuse to comment and people want to take that as a denial, I take it as a confirmation. But I don't know. I don't know.
You're back with The Informer. I'm Arian Potts here with my co-host, Nicholas Kamenyar-Sandry. We have more now of our interview with Joy's president of the board, David Macca McCarthy. Last weekend saw Joy's AGM and a meeting of most of Joy's presenters. Toby Halligan sat down with Macca to discuss the recent AGM and the future of Joy.
We there were four board members elected at the AGM. We have a board of seven. That was myself, Mark Adams, Helen Jance and Pete Holmes. And basically, one of the biggest challenges we've faced is getting the finances right. We had reported a very sizable deficit for the last financial year. Not as bad as originally we thought, but you know, not healthy. We'd had a members meeting early in September. I joined the board in August, and the board, you know, through some of the discussions, the board decided we'd have a spill of positions, even though the AGM was coming up of the president, the vice president, the treasurer and the secretary. We did that. We'd also had some board members resign. I became president. Amanda Miller became vice president. Priscilla Jeffrey, treasurer. And Melinda Rich, who was the president, she took the role of secretary because she actually had hit a term limit at the AGM. So she couldn't actually stand. She'd done 6 years. Anyway, so post the that members meeting, there was a lot of stuff to unpack. You know, people had concerns about the culture of Joy. Obviously, they had concerns about the finances. You know, there was quite a bit of discussion about the sound of Joy. And so we had that members meeting so people had the opportunity to, you know, to talk about those issues, to raise those issues. You know, so we can hear them, so we can listen to them, so we can implement the changes that are necessary to make Joy the place that we all want it to be. And we actually had a presenters meeting before the AGM, and there were more than 60 presenters there, which was fantastic. And Rachel's already doing some work on that, on putting together what's come out of that. Look, I think everyone has an opinion about Joy. And one of the things that everyone does agree on is that they're passionate about Joy. So we've just got to focus that on making Joy financially sustainable. We're moving to the Pride Centre probably fourth quarter next year. That's a big challenge for us. It's not going to be cheap. You know, we're working on that. We have received some government funding, which is over 4 years, but predominantly that is for, you know, assisting us in moving to the Pride Centre. But what I'm hearing around the station is we've had a number of people that are disengaged with the station that have re-engaged, and I see that as a positive. Donations are coming along nicely. Never enough. Money is always a challenge for Joy. So I feel pretty comfortable where we are. We're not out of the woods. We can't actually see the clear ground just yet. But I think we're absolutely headed in the right direction.
Just to unpack some of those kinds of issues a little bit more when it comes to, for example, the culture.
Yeah.
What kind of issues were people flagging?
Look, it's no secret. You know, community groups, I often joke that community groups are a loose confederation of warring tribes. And, you know, everyone has a passion for Joy. And people believe they weren't being heard, they weren't being listened to, they weren't being engaged. That was one of the big concerns. That wasn't, you know, I'm not going to say that's not true or it is true. There's always two sides to a story. they were certainly absolutely believing, you know, in that they thought that was the case. And it's our obligation, or my obligation as president, to engage them and to make sure that, you know, when people do raise issues of concern, you know, around the culture, around how volunteers are treated, around, you know, the feeling around the station, well, of course, we have to listen to it, and we have to engage on it and try and make it better. We have, at any one time, we have around 300 volunteers that are pretty actively engaged, and by that I mean, you know, they're in here on a regular basis, sometimes every day or every other day, you know, for an hour, a few hours, or a whole day. And, you know, so there's one of the things that came out of the presenters' meeting, for example, is that it's great for presenters to actually meet the other presenters, because a lot of the time you come into the station, all you're doing is your show. You might know the people who've done the show before you and after you, and, you know, but so I think it's also incumbent on volunteers and members to, you know, to engage with other members and hear what they're saying. Look, finance is always a challenge. It's always been a challenge for Joy. Any member organisation is going to have exactly the same issues. You know, whether it's a community organisation, whether it's a political party, whether it's a sporting club, it doesn't matter. You have the same issues. What you've got to do is, you know, provide a clear framework for people to give their feedback, and we have that. When you get that, you've then got to listen to it, you know, analyse it, you know, reality check it, and then act on it. It's pretty simple.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the move to the Pride Centre, are there any updates or changes around how that will likely proceed?
Yeah, look, it's going to be a pretty exciting space for us, brand new. Bang up to date, and working in a building, even though we have here in the past, you know, this was a community hub, and there are a lot of queer organisations that are in the building. There's going to be a lot of them centred at the Pride Centre, and I think that's going to provide a really great environment, you know, for working with those organisations. Look, it is a challenge because, you know, we're moving a location, you know, quite a long way, and for some volunteers that's going to be a challenge. It is well served by public transport, but, you know, people don't always like change. But the reality is this building, City of Melbourne are redeveloping it. We don't have a choice about staying here. I do think it's the right thing to move to the Pride Centre. So financially, yes, again, it's a challenge. We've received assistance from the state government. And, you know, I acknowledge that and thank them for that. It's quite significant. But we still, you know, need our members to support us financially to do that. And as we're getting closer and closer to the time, it's pretty expensive business. I do think when we're there, I'm looking forward to having next year's AGM at the Pride Centre. And then also 2021, being able to watch the Pride March from the roof of the Pride Centre. And look, there's a good feeling in Fitzroy Street. A lot of the traders are really, you know, very, very positive about it because they know it's going to bring a lot of foot traffic. It's going to bring people there. City of Port Phillip's been very supportive. But I've also got to say City of Melbourne and Sally Capp, the Lord Mayor, have been incredible in, you know, accommodating us here and looking after us. And, you know, they're doing a lot of work in this building, but they're leaving us alone. You know, ideally they'd like this floor. But, you know, they acknowledge that, you know, we're on a time frame as well. So always delicate negotiations there.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, as you were kind of saying, like, it will be a big change for Joy, but it's often the mark of strong organisations that they are capable of kind of, whether it's moving spaces or the culture
it's about shifting. It's about the same space, Toby, but it's much better laid out.
Yeah.
You know, the studios will be better, the production facilities will be better, you know, the workspaces are better, and there'll be that interaction, you know, whilst Joy is, you know, is separate, but there's that ability to interact with other community groups, and I see that as a real positive.
And for clarity, the third point you raised was about the sound. Can you give us some insight into what people were saying?
Yeah. Look, I think, you know, some people only listen to Joy some of the time, or they only listen to particular programs. When you look at the grid, you look at the diversity of the programming. Now, you're never going to get an absolutely consistent sound because it's individuals producing programs, presenting programs, music, you know, specialist programs of you know, and current affairs programs. You can never remove an opinion from them. What you can try and do is deal with the facts and be even-handed. But people get really passionate about the sound. They want the sound to be consistent, but sometimes they say we don't sound as good as we should. And I don't mean that in a technical sense. But again, that's an opinion, but we need to work on it because the more consistent we are, and it's important to remember, our listeners, our listener numbers are growing, our podcasts are very strong, so obviously someone likes us. Mm-hmm. You know, we're closing on 2 million podcast downloads in just under 3 years. Mm. Like, that's pretty significant numbers. Mm. So someone's liking us. Listener numbers in the survey are good. But again, just because you have some good thing on one side of the thing doesn't mean you ignore what people are saying on the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as well, I think, and this is something I'm conscious of as someone who's, you know, the EP of a show and has been making radio for quite a while, that we are kind of in a golden era for radio where there are some extraordinary podcasts being made.
And just look at, you know, the series of podcasts that Joy has put together with Switchboard and others, you know, Let's Talk About Suicide.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
14 different podcasts. It's probably about 6 or 7 or 8 hours in total. Extraordinary stuff, groundbreaking. And, you know, I can't think of another station that has done that or that would have the guts to do that and the sensitivities to do it, and particularly focused around our community.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the stuff that I think Joy is so good at and can be so good at, but we need to always pay attention to the quality of the sound and the content we're putting to air.
Mm, absolutely. And it's something that I've kind of conscious of with The Informer, for example, is that there have been some weeks where, because of the availability of, say, the volunteers who assist with the show, we've been able to create quite beautiful music mixes for particular stories. And we found music that really fits quite perfectly with particular stories. And then some weeks we're doing 6, 7, 8 interviews with different people. I mean, to give an example, I've been listening to a podcast that's about Dolly Parton and how she transformed American music that's been made in America. And as you say, a lot of amazing content is being made here on Joy, and podcasting has really transformed content.
You know, Pete Holmes, you know, I call him the podcast comptroller. And he puts together the podcast stats each month, end of each month, including the locations they're downloaded from. And one of the things that surprises me, in the last few months on a number of occasions, the fifth most downloaded location downloads are from the United Arab Emirates.
Mm, interesting.
And that is such a positive thing, you know, in a country that, you know, where we, you know, LGBTI folk are demonised and penalised and imprisoned and beaten up and have no human rights. You know, we can't, you know, it's the name that can't be spoken. Mm-hmm. You know, there are thousands of podcasts being downloaded every month by people in the UAE. Mm. That's the power of Joy. The discourse that goes on in the public domain, and you know, both of us, you know, you're interviewing me, I interview people on Saturday Magazine. You know, I try to keep it as civil as I can. Mm. Now, sometimes that's pretty hard. But, you know, the public discourse that's going on, the fact that, you know, we have, you know, let's look at the Extinction Rebellion protesters. Mm. I understand where they're coming from. I have a lot of sympathy for their, well, I agree with them. Where it's challenging, in, you know, is when they cause a lot of disruption to people, and people, you know, are just thinking about themselves. But the public discourse around this and the way that people discuss it, the way that media report it, there's a lack, a great lack of respect that has now crept in to the way news is reported, mm-hmm. and the way that, you know, that we engage, you know, with our fellow folk. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it then makes it even harder to have those discussions and to have those discussions on a reasonable level.
Yeah.
It's a real challenge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our media is not, you know, we don't have freedom of the press. You know, we have governments of all colours trying to restrict our freedom and what we know. And, you know, one of the great things about Joy is we actually get to talk about issues that other radio stations and other media won't talk about. Mm. And it sometimes surprises, you know, people in positions of power. They go, oh, God, they were talking about that on Joy. You know, how, you know, they get surprised. But, you know, we do have an obligation, but courtesy, whether it's in traffic, you know, whether it's in our daily lives, whether it's in how things are reported, there's a real lack of courtesy crept into our modern life that, you know, I put it down to we've both got greyhounds. And when you walk that dog, you take the little plastic bag. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you don't want to leave dog shit on the ground, right?
Mm, absolutely.
And it's called courtesy.
Yeah.
It's also the law, but it's actually about courtesy. Again, it's the little things like that. But, you know, to go back to the child sexual abuse problem, some institutions are doing the right work. The school that I was abused at, they're doing the right thing. Mm. I'm working closely with them. They're doing some really interesting stuff. Mm. Really groundbreaking. But they're the outliers.
Yeah.
They're the outliers.
And to go as well to, in terms of how religious people in general in Australia and tolerance, like it's, I don't want to speak in too much detail here, but I went to an Anglican school. I went back to that school and they are doing a lot of work to make the school more accommodating to trans and intersex and gay students. That contrasts with the attitude of the Sydney Archdiocese when it comes to these issues.
Of the Archbishop.
Yeah, Archbishop,
you know, of Sydney. I'm not sure that every diocese in Sydney holds that view. We had the ex-head of Anglicare on Saturday Magazine a week or two ago. And, you know, he painted a pretty clear picture that this is, you know, this is political. It's a power grab. It's about, you know, if the Anglican Church splits, what it will be about. Yeah, it'll be about policy, but it'll also be about money.
Yeah.
And Sydney is the richest diocese, and they want to be at the front of the queue. Mm. Now, what does it say in the Bible about being in the temple with money?
But, well, and rich men getting into heaven. Yeah.
I wasn't a great follower of that book, that franchise manual, but look, the churches, it's the leaders of the churches that are failing us.
Mm.
And I'm not a person of faith, but I respect people of faith. I'm sometimes challenged by it, their interpretation of it. But I often ask, particularly Christians, are LGBTI folk God's work?
Mm.
And that's the most telling question you can ask them.
Mm.
And ultimately, they have to say yes. And they usually do say yes. And you say, well, how's that work then? You know?
Yeah.
How can you, you know,
how do you reconcile these two ideas?
Yeah.
And when you can have a civil conversation, like as you say, one thing that I know you try to do on Saturday Magazine, one thing that we try to do on The Informer is we engage with people with different points of view and have those civil conversations. Because just to go back to you were referring before about, you know, the importance of the freedom of the press.
Yes.
What we're doing right now is actually, historically, if you compare the, say, they think 100 billion humans have at one point or another existed on the earth. It's extremely unusual. Like for the vast majority of human history, the idea of freedom of the press would have been an absurd idea that no one would have engaged.
It's like democracy. It's a recent concept.
Yeah. And most people living on the earth presently don't really have the kind of freedom that we're exercising.
And the
right
media
now.
That they do have the access to is predominantly either state-owned national media that isn't independent, or commercial media that certainly isn't independent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so the information they're getting, you know, is not accurate and it's not fair.
Mm.
And you don't hear about some of the things that go on in governments and business and communities.
You don't hear community voices.
Yeah, you don't.
To kind of wrap the whole conversation around.
Yeah, so it's real. It is such an important thing. You know, I take that responsibility seriously. Yeah. I really do.
And it's why organisations like Joy are important, because
they are.
Sometimes you're going to hear shows where you may not like the sound or you may not agree with the points of view that you're hearing, but the reality is one of the really important roles that Joy plays is giving voices that otherwise don't get heard a chance to
and
be
look
heard.
At, you know, I say to our listeners, look at that grid. Mm. Bring up that page with the grid. And have a look at the variety of content. Have a look at the podcasts. I think we're at the point where we probably have more, because on podcasts, it's a bit like a magazine. You work on a hand-on rate of two or three. And that means if you buy a magazine, two or three other people are going to read it. You're going to, and with podcasts, you often share them. They're not always downloaded again. Mm. I think we're at the point where we possibly have more podcast listeners and online listeners than we do to people actually listening to the wireless, to the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, how people listen has changed so much. I think radio is new media.
Mm.
And some of the challenges that we're going to face moving to the Pride Centre, you know, is broadcasting, how we can reach more people. When I look at those podcast stats and I see where they're downloaded from, that gives me so much encouragement. And if you look at the great long list, and I encourage you know, Pete Holmes will show it to you, There isn't a place in the world other than, I think, Antarctica, and I'm not sure we're not downloaded there, but there isn't a place in the world where joy isn't downloaded.
Mm.
Podcasts aren't downloaded. That's a pretty significant achievement.
Absolutely.
And what that means is, you know, there are our folk there, and there are fellow travellers and supporters that are downloading our content and listening to it. They're making a conscious decision. Mm. They haven't come across it by accident. They're making a conscious decision because it is independent radio. It's never going to be perfect, but it's independent radio. It's put together by passionate people. And that's got to be a good thing.
And that, folks, is why it's worth supporting Joy. Go online or send us an email or call up, donate, become a member.
Because we're on air, We don't run on air.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.